This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
They thought it was the perfect crime until the body was found. You're listening to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring psychotherapist and author Siobhan Scott.
The trial of Richard Allen, it continues on, the prosecution making its case, the defense about to take their turn at the stand, and may already be there by the time you are watching this. Joining me to discuss the case thus far, Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author. The prosecution making a lot of arguments, making basically the same arguments that we've been hearing for the last several years about why Richard Allen is guilty. And surprise, they hold up in court about as well as they did in the general public. Not at all. Because they don't lead anywhere to Richard Allen, which is kind of an important thing when you're trying a murder case against someone. You want some evidence to kind of line up with the person you're saying did it. What's your thoughts so far on this whole thing? We've heard so many different arguments being made, and we've now heard about the interrogation of Richard Allen. And we haven't seen it, but we've had many people who are there reporting on it, basically bringing us back the transcript as best as could be written down in a notepad for us to review. And it really wasn't, I don't know. I mean, as a psychotherapist, was there anything alarming in there? Did it seem like that of a transcript or answers of someone who just went and killed some kids or someone who's like, why am I on your radar?
Yeah. You know, it's just an awful case. And it's one that, we keep wanting there to be some kind of proof, something that's, you know, really going to tip the scales one way or the other here. And at this point, the only thing we've got really that I've heard is the ballistics. Yeah. And we know we're going to have competing experts on that, as we always do with these things. So how much weight to even give that? It's also hard to understand. I really tried to pay attention to what we're hearing the testimony about it was. And it was difficult to, you know, I wanted to focus in and learn, and I'm hoping the jury is doing that. But, you know, it's hard for the rest of us to make sense of it all. And as far as the interrogation, it sounded like the Reed technique, you know, which the cops come in and they say, you know, we know you did it. We've got all this proof. And they're lying and they're making it up and they're hoping that they can get the person to confess, and they come down really hard on them, and then they flip back and forth with, you know, being nice, do you need any water, all that sort of thing. I don't like the Reed technique. I mean, I realize that there are times they've caught bad people with it who have then confessed, but I think you can also get false confessions that way. And with everything that has happened with his mental health problems, you know, it leaves me very uneasy.
It's been criticized over the years, and it's not used in a lot of higher up type interrogations because it doesn't produce results. Yeah. Somehow on the lower end of the scale on local police work, it seems to be one they like to use. Why? Yeah. Because I guess it checks a box, I guess would be the correct answer. If they're wanting to get that box checked, if they're wanting to put a name in the blank of this is our suspect, use the Reed technique. You'll get somebody. Doesn't mean it's the right person, but you can look it up. I mean, the psychological coercion is a big part of it. It involves psychological pressure. Isolate the suspect, confront them with the alleged evidence, suggesting cooperation will lead to that leniency. Yeah. And it creates a really stressful environment, especially for someone who didn't do anything. I mean, if someone came to you accusing you of something and they're making all these things, you're going to get weird. You're going to act off. That's just how anyone would be, guilty or innocent. If you get accused of something, you're not going to necessarily get a great reaction. It gets a lot of false confessions. It shows that the prolonged interrogation stuff that we see used by police departments quite often, especially in individuals who are young or mentally vulnerable, which Richard Allen very might have been. You get those confessions out of him. Obviously, he did not confess in that interrogation. He basically called them out and said, you know, it looks like you're looking for a fall guy here. He knew exactly what they were doing. Shortly thereafter, he gets arrested. They don't have the material they need in this guy. So, hey, let's put him in solitary confinement for a year. We don't know he's the guy, but let's torture him. Then he'll probably say something, which he did. He then said, I'm the killer, in weird ways, which we still have yet to hear any audio of any of those 60 infamous confessions. If they're so solid, if they're so evidentiary to his guilt, don't you think we would have heard them by now in court?
I would have hoped so. And it's very interesting that the timing of these confessions coincided with the mental health deterioration. And we know if people are psychotic, they will confess to all sorts of things they didn't do. We have plenty of evidence of that. And I understand that he did have frequent contact with some kind of mental health professional. And those are the records I'm really interested in. You know, what did he say to the mental health professional? And was he psychotic at the time? You know, what's the timeline of the mental health symptoms? And I haven't heard that, anything about that really specific at this point.
Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, thank you for joining us. Let's talk about that Reed technique for a few moments here. It was developed back in the 1950s. It was originally seen as a breakthrough in law enforcement, a structured psychological approach to obtain confessions from suspects. It's what everybody wants, right? The method emphasizes confrontation, accusation, and the presentation of fabricated evidence. Yes, some point in our history, we thought, well, this'll lead to facts. It'll lead to convictions. It'll lead to people admitting they did something they didn't do. You get somebody in that role of let's put them away forever and feel good because we got the bad guy, right? Unfortunately, that's not really how it worked. Combined with an apparent path to leniency, if the suspect cooperates, this method for decades was taught as the gold standard in police interrogations, with officers trained to apply pressure until they got a confession. What if it's not the right person? Over time, cracks in its effectiveness began to show. Cases involving false confessions started to surface, exposing the darker side of this technique. Innocent people, particularly young, mentally ill, or socially vulnerable, were confessing to crimes they didn't commit after enduring hours of psychological manipulation. High-profile exonerations, often based on DNA evidence, further revealed the technique's flaws, forcing many law enforcement agencies to rethink its use. But many still use it. We don't have an across the board, this is how we're going to interrogate people on U.S. soil standard. We don't. There's no standard and practice law for this or rules from police agency to police agency. They kind of pick what they think works best. And it's not always the best. Despite these findings and the availability of more effective rapport-based methods like the peace model, the Reed technique is still alive and well. The allure of a confession seen as the ultimate case closer remains powerful, particularly in these high-stake investigations like the Delphi murders. Even though experts have debunked the method as unreliable, law enforcement in Delphi learned and leaned heavily on it with Richard Allen, pushing for admissions that would fit their narrative of the events. The ongoing use of this outdated technique raises a lot of unsettling questions about the justice system's priorities. When the focus shifts from finding the truths, just securing a conviction, getting the guy you got in front of you because everybody else led nowhere. You're the last one on our list. It's got to be you, right? Innocent people getting caught in the crosshairs. It's a sobering reminder of how tradition, even when flawed, can endure in the face of overwhelming evidence to the contrary. As the Delphi case continues to move forward, it underscores the damages of relying on coercive methods to build a case and forces us to ask, how many more confessions are we willing to accept without questioning the process? I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for joining us. If you want to follow the cases that we're following and get the updates that we're giving you every single day, be sure to press subscribe wherever you get podcasts or this video here on YouTube. Thanks for watching and thanks for listening. Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
All right, true crime addicts, let's cut the crap. You're knee-deep in the gory details of your favorite podcast when suddenly a commercial hits like a bad meal. Seriously? You deserve better. Upgrade to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, where you can binge without those annoying ads. Plus, get extended interviews that go deeper into the darkness and early access to episodes so you can be the first to know. It's like trading up from fast food to fine dining, but with more blood. So, go ahead, search for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and feast on the good stuff.